So we are the Happy House Hunters group, and we're out on meetup across different names. We do also short-term rentals. We talk about short-term rentals. Sometimes we actually get to interview someone that has like an Airbnb for folks that want to get involved with short-term. But we mostly talk about long-term. We go through the six F's of real estate. Because I am a firm believer, even if you're going to do short term, that you have to have an exit strategy. And the exit strategies, oftentimes, if you're doing a midterm or short term, if for some reason, and we were just having that conversation before I started recording, if for some reason that particular area of real estate isn't performing as well, your long term rental is always a great exit strategy. Because if, like during COVID, if you remember, folks couldn't even travel. So all of a sudden, the short term reservations were canceling right and left because folks weren't even allowed to travel or they were scared to travel, that whole big picture there. And so my long term rentals is what really carried me through that time. So I was happy that I had diversified and didn't have all my apples in the same basket of short term rentals. And some of my friends that did, they actually financially got into a pickle during that time because all of a sudden their units were just sitting empty. They didn't have the cash flow that they needed. So I'm a firm believer to diversify. And so today we're going to talk about filling, and we're going to focus mostly on long term. And I'm going to show you kind of how I do that. The first thing that Sue and I, we were just talking before I started recording, is that her question was she wasn't getting the enough applicants. And this is a tough time of year, and we're going to talk about that because we're coming up.
Enough good applicants. I've got
Yeah,
lots of
well,
applicants, but they're not very good.
yeah, well, and that's because folks that do a little bit of forward planning and have the income that you're looking for, they really have strategically designed their lifestyle that they don't have to move right the week before Thanksgiving and coming into Christmas and in the holidays and all of that good stuff. So anyway, we're going to talk about all of that. We've got Sherry coming in. Sherry, we want to make sure that you can hear us okay. And if you'd like to come up, you still can. Yeah, you still can actually turn your camera off. But anyway, so Sherry is with us today as well. Anyway, I'm Kathy Binner, and I started the Happy House Hunters group several years ago. There were just a group of us that got together, and we were just trying to figure this out, if you will. None of us had been investors in the past, and we wanted to be investors, but we didn't know how. So we had gone to a few seminars together, and we read some of the books, and we went to some of the meetups, and we said, okay, we're just gonna simply start. So we did. We jumped in and we started. Eric, if you're there, please feel free to come up. That way you can turn your camera on and off if you wish. We'll see if Eric wants to rejoin us. I think he's coming up. So anyhow, bear with me. We're just kind of letting folks in. We have seven of us so far, so we're all
Hey, good
good.
afternoon.
Yes, thank you for being
Sir,
with us.
of course, of course.
I'm sorry.
I said, of course, absolutely. Thank you.
Anyway, feel free to turn your video on or off, whatever you wish there. There are seven of us on, and I'll try to keep an eye there. There's Kyle. Kyle, welcome. Can you
Hello,
hear
how's
us?
everybody doing?
Yes, Eric, I'm going to put you on mute so I can go ahead and present today. And Kyle, thank you for being there. So anyway, I'm Kathy Binner. I started the Happy House Hunters group, and so through the years, we did decide to pull the trigger, if you will, and we started investing. And I am now up to 28 doors. And I was just sharing before we started recording, my 28 doors is a combination of some commercial, some residential. I have long-term, mid-term, short-term, and therefore that diversifies me depending on what the market does. I want to go around briefly and see how many units everybody else has. Chris, share with the group again what it is that you do and how many units that you have.
We buy distressed apartment complexes and resorts, rehab them and make them into nice homes. That just a little under 600.
Yeah. So, wow. Now he's built this business out. How old were you when you started this?
46.
Okay. I was in my 40s as well. I think everything kind of comes together in your 40s. I think you have enough life experiences that you can start making some good choices, but yet you see, retirement coming at you fast, and so you realize that you have to do something or something
The
different.
main thing too is to start big. It does not real estate does not make sense to start small. There's too many variables that can go wrong. So like you got to start big. And when I say that, people flip out. It's like say if you need a new roof for a single family house, right? Say for instance, that's your profit for a year, maybe a year and a half, maybe sometimes longer now. So with a complex, it's just a math equation. It's not going to wipe out your cash flow.
I get that. I certainly get that. But a lot of folks, they're just so risk adverse that just
Well,
scares
if you're
them to
risk adverse, then you just put the numbers down and it's a numbers game. So it's really makes it so that if you're risk averse, then bigger is better because that is you're mitigating your risks tenfold. Right. And passing stress tests too. So.
I understand the math behind all of that, but we have a lot of investors that just can't visualize themselves in that realm. But thank you for being with us today. I appreciate you sharing. And there are those in our group that are in that realm, but there are many that are not, that just have one or two rentals and they're kind of struggling. And so those are the folks I want to talk to today.
The reason why they're struggling is just so the average house to fill up, say if you have a single family home, the average time to fill that home is 3 months. So the average time to fill up an apartment is anywhere from 17 to 15 days.
Wow, and why is
So
it so much faster for an apartment?
because usually you have a team of experts that are working on it. They're not mom and pops that are just, summarizing. You're taking a big part of your wealth, right? And you're gambling if you're doing it in a smaller way. So when you do that, you want to professionalize your systems and process and put the people in place to do that. So that's why I learned the hard way. So like that's why I'm telling you all this. So it just makes you can make your money work way harder and quicker and pass a bunch of stress tests and mitigate your risks faster.
Because you have the cash flow to do it.
Well, because then you team up with people or buy into a syndication or buy into a thing. You want to stress test. You can buy a single family home, say for like $100,000, right? And then by the time you save up to buy another one, it could take you about X amount of years, right? If you go into an apartment complex, that deal's going to probably be around 5 to 7 years in length, right? And you double your money and mostly tax free. So you do that deal all day long.
But again, you have to be able to wrap your mind around that size of a deal. And I don't know that that is the bulk of our audience today. So I do want to talk to those that are not in that realm. But Chris, thank you so much for sharing. Sue, tell us a little bit about you, how many doors you have, and what you're doing.
We have seven single family homes and one commercial building. We're full with rent, except for one that I'm advertising right now on Zillow, and that's the one I'm not getting very good candidates yet. So anyway, interested to hear what you have to say today.
Okay, perfect, perfect. We've got Christy and Sherry listening in, and so Kyle, how about you? Share with us what you do, and Kyle is also my co-host, my co-mod, and so Chris, share with us today. There he is. You're blurry, but we see you. We see you're there.
Sorry, my computer is running a little slow this morning. I think it's trying to download updates in the background, and I can't stop it from doing that. But
Anyway, welcome. So tell us what it is that you're doing.
yep, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm a real estate agent and also an inspiring investor, thanks to Kathy. And we work together in several lanes. Also, under her writing lane too. I'm a standing offer, a staff author on her wonderful magazine. If you guys haven't checked it out, it's called Freestyle Living Magazine. Our most recent edition just came out. Yeah, I help people find and buy and sell and analyze investment properties, and as well as single family homes too. But I really like getting into the investment side of things.
Very good. And you have your first investment already. And so you're just getting started. Am I correct?
Right. Yep. I just recently celebrated my 41st birthday, and I'm just getting started in my own personal investment realm in real estate.
Perfect. I love it. I love it. I am going to share my screen and show you a little bit about what it is that I do and how that what I have can possibly help you out here. So bear with me. It'll take me just a moment to get to my screen. This is my Academy homepage. And when you just go to kathybinner.com, you will come up to this homepage. And then when you can come across the menu and here to the More button, and here is the Real Estate Investors. And when you click on the Real Estate Investors, it takes you down to this Happy House Hunters course. And when you click on that, and it comes up to this particular page, and it's the 6 F's of real estate investing. So it goes through several courses on how to find the deals, how to fund the deals. Then you scroll down how to fix the deals, and then into flip the deals if you are just flipping, or how you can fill the deals. And today we're going to talk about filling those real estate deals. And there's all kinds of courses we could go through, but today I want to talk about 6 types of problem tenants. Whoops, let's go back. Here's the 6 types of problem tenants. The first big problem tenant is the late or partial paying tenants. I want to just kind of paint this picture for those of you that are on this call. I started off with just, of course, one commercial building. And when I saw that it was going to be basically a great cash flowing property, as I paid the mortgage down and the value of the property went up, my cash flow just kept increasing. And so I realized very quickly that this was going to be a great retirement strategy for me. And so being in the salon industry, for those of you that know me personally, I was in the salon industry for 25 years. I realized that if I could buy commercial buildings to put my salons in, that at the end of a 20-year note, I would have a paid for building instead of a shoebox full of rent receipts. I mean, that it's that simple to realize that you can build quite a bit of wealth. And like Chris was saying earlier, the bigger, the better, because again, your numbers are just bigger, you know? But I couldn't wrap my mind around that when I started. I was very risk adverse, and I didn't understand that bigger was better at that point. So I started very small with just one building, and I was pretty darn proud of myself that I did one commercial building. But I did end up purchasing and leveraging the first building for the second, and then the third and fourth and fifth. And I did end up retiring from my salon industry, my salon business, with 5 paid for commercial buildings. And so now, all of those, I've still owned the buildings. And at the end of my tenure as a salon, I gave away the business. And everybody goes, what? Why do you mean you gave away the business? Well, I gave away the business because my model in the salon industry, for those of you that may or may not know, and don't jump out there and buy salons thinking, oh, if Kathy did it, that's what I'm going to do, because it's a whole different animal. You have to have a certain personality to run a salon, because you have a lot of very artistic people, and they're not, statistically, they're not as business minded as your regular other businesses might be. When you're in the salon industry, you have a lot of folks that are very creative, and they don't really take the time to do the business end. So there was a lot of babysitting that had to be done in running a salon, keeping everybody on the straight and narrow when it came to paying their taxes and paying sales tax and making sure that they kept good records for their, you know, for their income taxes. I mean, it was just on and on and on, just a lot of babysitting. So don't everybody run out and buy a salon unless you're up for it. So anyway, back to the story though, I decided that I wanted to run what was called a booth rent salon, which means that my tenant simply rented a station from me in the building. So therefore, I did not have to be their boss. I did not have to book their clients for them. I did not have to do their taxes for them. I did not have to take care of their products for them. They did all of that themselves. They were all independent contractors individually, and they just rented a booth from me. And it's called a booth rent salon back in the day. They did update that definition, and now it's called an independent contractor salon. And so what I did as I was buying these houses, because I would go into an older part of a little town or city, and I would buy a house on a street that had turned commercial. So many of you, you can picture this. If you go into downtowns of all these little cities, you see where the houses that used to be residential are now like a little bookstore, a little coffee shop or whatever. And they've turned those centers of those little cities into commercial properties. And so those areas, they were already basically industrialized to bring people into the little downtown areas. I mean, the cities are already working to get people to come down there. They're doing little festivals and all, and you've seen this all around, especially here in Central Ohio. So that was my game plan, was to buy a house. That way I didn't have to spend big dollars, because again, kudos to Chris, I couldn't wrap my mind around spending something huge, but I could wrap my mind around buying a house, because I bought the house I was living in. So I could wrap my mind around, I could buy a house. So I bought this commercial house and turned it into a salon. And because it was a house, it already had rooms, just like a house. And so I turned each room into a little salon suite. And so, hence the name, my salons were called All About You Salon Suites. And then I could just rent the room instead of just the station. I could rent the room to a stylist or a nail tech or a massage therapist. And they started feeling that that room was their salon. So they took more ownership than if they just walked in and they were renting this chair. Does that make sense to those of you that are listening? Because when you go into a traditional beauty salon, it's a row of chairs. And so you can, you know, describe and explain to the stylist that they're going to rent a chair. But when they came into my facilities, they were going to rent a room. And so it was their suite, and it had a door that they could lock when they went home. So I didn't have to worry about their scheduling, their products. I didn't have to police any of that. It was like the ultimate house hack, you know, of having either short-term rentals or having roommates or whatever. It was the ultimate house hack. And it was very, very acceptable to do this, because booth rent salons were very common. They still are in Central Ohio, not so much along the coast. If you go to the East Coast or West Coast, booth rent salons are not as common as they are all through mid-America, the Midwest, but they are very common here in Central Ohio. So I ended up having five of those. And as my staff would simply pay their booth rent for their suite, I simply would pay my mortgage, taxes, and insurance. And at the end of 20 years, I ended up with five paid for commercial buildings. However, I didn't have any employees, so I didn't have to worry about any workers' comp or any withholdings, because I didn't have any employees. They were all independent contractors. They were all renting a space from me. So I truly, I was the landlord from day one. And so I really didn't own their clients. The only thing I owned was used salon equipment. But the salon was functioning as a going concern. And so what I did when I wanted to retire is I looked out across all of my stylists and said, okay, the cream usually rises to the top. Who has the skill set that could actually run a business and babysit everyone else that, you know, that they had to keep on task? So once I determined who that person was, I simply pulled them aside and quietly said, would you be interested in owning a salon? Well, of course, you know, 100% of all five of my buildings, that person was like, yeah, I've always thought I wanted to own a salon. So I said, well, for $125 fee, we can go down to the Board of Cosmetology, and at the stroke of an ink pen, I can make you the owner of the business. And I said, but a couple of conditions. Number one, I'm going to give you all the equipment. Now, it was 20 years old because I'd been in business for 20 years, but it was all still working. you know, it wasn't brand new, but it was all functioning. I mean, all of my staff was working every day. I said, I'm going to give you all that equipment. I said, and option number two is if you decide to upgrade the equipment, you can't give it back to me. I don't want it back. You have to get rid of it if you're deciding to update equipment. I said, but this, the business will be yours. And I said, you get to collect all the booth rent. You get to pay the utility bills. You get to name the salon. You get to do it however you want. And I simply will truly be your landlord. And so at the end of the day, or more like at the end of my 20 years, I was able to retire and the salons are all still going strong. Or one of my buildings, I actually made it 100% residential. So I was thinking along the same lines as Chris. I made it 100% residential, and he is absolutely correct. I filled it just like that. And so now I have one residential building. I have one that is an office building, and then three of the five are still salons and going strong. So it worked out really well, but at the end of the day, it doesn't matter to me whether there's a salon in there, whether it's residential, whether it's commercial, whether it's an office building. It doesn't matter because for me, it is all cash flow at this point because the buildings are paid for. And so that's how I got started. And but I continued to work even after I started building my wealth with these five commercial buildings. I continued to work. And so I started buying single families, multifamilies, you know, duplexes, fourplexes. So I just started investing in real estate across the board. And then again, like I expressed early on, I actually then diversified into some midterm and short term as well. Because again, midterm, you're going to bring in, and this is just a rule of thumb. Everybody has a different experience, but a rule of thumb is that a midterm will bring in about twice the rental income as a long-term, and a short-term will bring in about four times the rental income as a long-term. But you have to always have that exit strategy on those midterms and short-terms if for some reason, you know, the bottom kind of falls out of your tenant market. For example, again, when we went through the pandemic, short term kind of came to a halt for there for a few months. And but midterm went way up because all of a sudden they had all of these visiting nurses coming in to help at all the different hospitals. And so midterm went way up, but short term, the bottom fell out, and long term hung in there, you know, because everybody had to have a roof over their head. So you can diversify and protect yourself a little better. I want to talk a little bit. We're talking about late or partial paying payers, but I want to go back and address Sue's concern today is that she has a single family that she's trying to get filled and she's not getting enough good quality applicants. And so you do have to actually address the audience that you're talking to. So for example, when I do an ad, I try to answer all the questions that a tenant might ask in their mind. I try to think to myself, what's in it for them? Because every time you're running an ad for anything, the person reading your ad, the first thing on the front of their mind is, what's in it for me? That's why they're reading the ad. What's in it for me? I mean, you know, Kyle and I, we were talking about, you know, he's in our writer's lane. And when we do a writing workshop, if I put out an ad for a writer's workshop, I have to address what's in it for the attendee, because that's how they're reading it. What's in this for me? Why should I go to this? Why should I move to this house, Sue? Why should I move to your house? And so you want to address that in the writing of your ad. So you're going to want to put something in there because you're coming up on the holidays. So you're going to want to put something in there about the property being wonderful for a Thanksgiving celebration or perfect. And you might even stage it a little bit that direction, you know, have a nice big table. If you're going to virtually, is your property staged now, Sue? No. If not, you can virtually stage it. There's all kinds of apps out there, and Kyle might even be able to help you with that. But you can either manually stage it. That takes you have to have some furniture and you have to drag it over there and set it up. Or there are staging companies that'll stage it for you. but that's going to cost you some money. Or you can virtually stage it, which is the least expensive. You just have to put somewhere in your ad that it is virtually staged. You don't want your viewers to think, oh my gosh, does that table come with it? And so I put that the unit is not furnished and that it is virtually staged. And it's usually just a disclaimer that I can put at the bottom of the ad, usually smaller type, italicized, something to make it separate from the rest of my typesetting in the ad. But it's just a disclaimer saying that the unit comes unfurnished and it is virtually staged. But if you set it up with the big Thanksgiving dinner on the table and or you have the Christmas tree in the corner, see, now you're going to appeal to an audience for this time because that's going to be their biggest resistance is, oh, do we really want to move right now during the holidays? But if you can appeal to them that, you know, it has lots of great parking, their family can come for Thanksgiving and Christmas, they can move in time to host the festivities, you know. And so that's going to appeal a little bit because that's going to be one of their concerns, whether they want to make that big effort. Another thing is that this is always an expensive time of year. If the person who you're looking for is the matriarch or patriarch of the family, that's the income level that you're looking for this, you know, like maybe they would be the ones hosting, then they also are thinking, oh gosh, we're going to have expenses because we're going to have all the family in, it's Christmas time, we got to buy Christmas presents for all the kids and the grandkids or whatever. And so giving them some kind of an incentive, you know, a holiday incentive, you know, let us be the first one to give you a holiday gift of a discount, maybe on a deposit or even a special where maybe you can even spread out the deposit where, say, you know, pay the first month's rent and you can make the deposit in three even payments or something to that effect. So, because again, a move is expensive. You know, by the time you have the truck and the, you know, and move the furniture and you've got the deposits, if they're coming from another area where maybe they've not had utility bills where you are, then they have to even pay deposits for those utilities to get their utilities on. So all of a sudden they're like, oh my gosh, do we really want to do this right now over the holidays? So you have to enter the conversation in their minds and give them something that makes them say, oh gosh, we can do this. We love this house and it you're making it easy for us to make this decision to say yes. Is that helpful, Sue?
Yes.
But be firm on your policies and let me be the first to say this. Don't get too distressed yourself to lower your standards just to get it filled. Sometimes, and again, it goes back to what Chris was saying, these single families, he said it takes, 3 months to fill a single family. Don't get too excited. Like, I'm going to say, okay, they can make less money than what I really wanted them to make. And they can have, you know, a lower credit score than what I really wanted them to have just because I want to get it filled. Sometimes it's, you buy yourself a lot of headaches by doing that. You know, and then you're going to live with those headaches for the rest of your lease term. So, and you very well could end up, if you're going to give them all kinds of leeway up front, you could end up like this, having this late or partial paying payers. And I'm just going to go through the six problem clients. The biggest one is the late or partial paying payers. It's awfully hard for you to maintain the property. Yes, Chris.
The other thing too, is if in states like California and New York, if you take a partial payment, you are not allowed to start the eviction process. So the eviction process in California, I think, is 60 days after the last payment. So if you take a partial payment, that 60 days starts again. So you don't ever want to take partial payments ever.
And thank you for that. Now, in Ohio, you're allowed to take a partial payment and as long as you make it very clear that there is an unpaid balance on what they owed, but it does muddy the waters. So like Chris was saying, even though in Ohio you can, I prefer not to. And I think Sue and I was just having this conversation maybe last month too, is we're self-managing and we are using a software program called Inago. And in Inago, and it's very similar to Buildium and a lot of those others, you know, programs. There's a ton of them out there. But we chose Inago. And inside Inago, there is a checkbox that you can check where you can accept a partial payment or not. I make sure that is checked off, that I do not accept partial payments for that reason. And that way, if someone is struggling, I feel, and again, back to Chris's point, I have enough doors now. It's awfully hard to do this when you only have one, because you're like, oh, you're rented or you're not. You're paying your bills or you're not. I mean, you don't have a lot of room in there, a cash flow, because your bills are still due, especially if you have a note on that property. Your bills are still due, even if you're not getting the rent. So you're like, oh, let me milk them along. Let me try to get whatever they can pay, and I'll work with them. And you know, after a while, that's exhausting. That is just so exhausting. But the more units you have where the cash flow is coming in, then the less you have to really get down into the weeds with each of these individuals. And so my suggestion is to turn off that partial payment. I would rather help them find a unit they can't afford so that I can find someone who can afford my unit. And then it's a win-win. That way, that is, you're not solving their problem by dragging them along. Because once you start dragging them along, you know, you're chasing that rent every few days, and they don't want to run from you any more than you want to chase them. And so all of a sudden, you're not doing them a favor either. The biggest favor you could do them for them is to say, go find a unit that you can afford. Go move somewhere cheaper. You know, you might have to make some sacrifices as a tenant to find someplace cheaper. I know you love my house, but go find something you can afford and take that pressure off, because it doesn't do them any favors to be racking up all these late fees and all, you know, it really is not. You're doing them a much bigger service by allowing them out of the lease and just letting them go find a place they can afford. And it's a lot less headaches for you. So again, I'm firm on my late and partial paying payers. I'm just very firm on that. And Inago helps me be firm. And then again, I kind of want to paint this picture for some of the folks that are listening in. On Inago, not only do I set it up as a business under, and again, I'm not a licensed realtor, and Kyle can tell you that if you're going to be a property manager, if you call yourself property management, if you're managing more than your own property, you have to, you know, have the real estate license in Ohio and the broker's license and under a broker and all that. And so I don't call myself a property manager, like property management, and I only manage my own. But I am a housing provider, and I do set it up as a business. So mine is under Kathy Benner Companies. And I'm going to jump over and just show you what that looks like. Mine is just a one-page website. And again, you want it to look like a business. And so mine is just under Kathy Benner Companies, Rental Investments. And when you scroll down, the first thing, we pride ourselves in being a non-smoking, non-vaping housing provider. I put that right at the top because smoke can damage a lot of your units. So I try to head that off at the very beginning. Animals is a different story because of all of the you know, the support animals, the emotional support animals, and the service animals. And so I do have another whole policy for that. I don't have any long-term rentals currently available. All of mine are rented at the moment. But then you scroll down, I do have a conference room you can rent. It talks a little bit about what I do. I have, again, long-term, mid-term, short-term. It gives a little bit of history, and then my commercial. And here's one of those houses that I had converted early on into a salon. It is now an actual office building, and it's called the Gerald Frederick Suites. And it is an office building. And I have a waiting list of folks that want in there. I now have a waiting list of about 5 businesses that are on my list that want a suite in there as soon as one comes available. And so again, once you develop that as a business and people look to you as a business, you will start to get a waiting list of people that want your units. And you can avoid a lot of these hassles of non-payers, because you know, if you've got a non-payer, as soon as you get them out of there and can get the unit ready, you've got somebody else that's ready to move right in. You know, they've already been qualified. But here's what I recommend. if you're just a little mom and pop business and you want to run it more like a business and not have your tenants taking you over the hurdles every month, then have an advisory board. Now, your advisory board can be the folks that you normally go to for advice. I use, you know, my real estate, Kyle's on my advisory board. He's my realtor. He's my real estate agent. I have my insurance guy is on my advisory board. I have a couple of contractors on my advisory board. And you can click through on my advisory board. And Chris, kudos to you for building a team. I'm at the very beginning stages of building my team. But here is my advisory board. And you can scroll down and see everybody that is on my advisory board. And so they show up right here. So if your tenants, you know, look to you and go, really, does she really have an advisory board? Yes, I do. And they can actually see the advisory board. So I don't know if that's helpful or not, but then I also am building a staff. And so I can then click on the staff. Now, here is what helps since I am an owner. I have a staff. I have an executive assistant. I have an administrative assistant. Then I have a maintenance supervisor, I have a housekeeping manager, and then I have a couple of support specialists and an intern. And they can kind of do, you know, all of the busy work. So I'm just now starting to build a team. But what happens is this gal right here, Lucy Parker, she is a virtual administrative assistant. She actually does not live very close to me. And she lives over around the Springfield area. And she is the one that responds inside Inago to all of my tenant inquiries. Now, the reason that that's helpful is because her job, and this is your job too, as the landlord, your job is to fulfill your lease. Don't be the person that breaks your lease. Your tenants are always anxious to break the lease. You know, well, can I have a dog even though it says I can't? Can I pay late even though I'm supposed to pay on time? Can I paint the room purple even though it says I can't? Your job is to fulfill your lease. Don't break your lease because your tenant is always pushing you to break the lease. So I have Lucy, and Lucy, all she does is reaffirm the lease. That's all she does is reaffirm the lease. So a request comes in on Inago and Lucy can respond and say on this page, this paragraph, blah, 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 this is, you know, what you agreed to in the lease. And, but she can soften that up a little bit. And the way I've trained her is I want her, you know, to be good cop, bad cop. The advisory board is always my bad cop. The advisory board is always my bad cop. Lucy is my good cop. Lucy can say, oh, I think that sounds wonderful, but let me check with the advisory board. And then she comes back and says, I checked with the advisory board and they're upholding the lease that says blah, 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 blah. And the tenants are like, oh, thank you so much for checking. We just needed to know. And what it does is it takes all of that emotional process off of you. Because Lucy does not have any money in the game. I do. So all of a sudden, if I'm a brand new investor and I only have one or two units and all of a sudden my tenant is like, oh, can I pay late? I'm like, what? What do you mean pay late? I've got a mortgage I got to pay here in a month and I was counting on your rent to pay the mortgage and the insurance and the taxes. And then, you know, and like Chris said, you know, and your house is going to need a new roof and it's going to wipe out, you know, a whole year of my profit and or more. And all of a sudden, I'm too invested in the game. I'm too deep in the finances and it's too crucial for me to get that rent that all of a sudden now I'm dragging them along because I don't want them to move out because I know if I have to flip it, it's back to Chris. It's going to take those 3 months to get it filled again. And all of a sudden I've got to go in and maybe, you know, change out floor coverings and paint and I was just worried that I was going to not pay the mortgage this month. And now all of a sudden I've got a big ticket of a flip coming up if they move out. So now I'm dragging them along. Okay, whatever you can pay, you know, is fine. Just don't move. And your tenants sense that. They feel that. And so once they take advantage of that, that can just go on and on and on. And so again, no matter how well you've protected yourself, you still have to always deal with how you're going to handle late or partial payers. And that's an area that I want to say to you, do not lower your standards there. You have to, the best advice is you have to be firm no matter how nice of a person you are. And this is where most of the horror stories come in from, you know, all Uncle Joe used to have rentals and I'm never going to have any because I remember he just had to chase the rent all the time, you know, and I don't want all that stress. Well, you can eliminate that stress by just not letting your tenants be partial payers. And Inago can help you, and your advisory board, and having an admin assistant. All of that can help you stick to your guns. Okay, so don't get sucked into that. Okay, number two is wrecking balls. Oh, how many of us have had a unit that when they move out, the place is trashed, and all of a sudden, whoo. So again, it happens all over the place at all different levels, and no matter how well you screen the tenant at the front end, you never know over time what's going to happen on the back end. You know, the boyfriend moves in and, you know, and he's a hoarder or a job, you know, I mean, all kinds of things can happen there. And so the only way that you can stay on top of that is to have normal inspection times. We were doing twice a year. We went to four times a year. So four times a year, we want to be inside that unit. And the way that we get inside the unit, and it's built right into my lease, is that we will do quarterly inspections and with the intent of changing out air filters in furnace units, making sure that any air units are clear of debris, and double checking batteries in smoke detectors and carbon monoxide detectors. And we just put that on our maintenance list, and our maintenance team, Lucy just sends out a notice that says we're going to be doing quarterly inspections and please expect someone to be inside your unit on these dates. And it's written right into the lease and agreed to at the beginning when they sign the lease. And that gets us in there. So when we're in there, then we're looking for that. You know, do they have stuff piled up? Like I had one unit, we bought and like Chris, we buy the distressed units that are totally distressed. And then we bring them up to clean, beautiful, safe housing. And we had one that the whole basement had been underwater. So we put in all new mechanicals and then, you know, did the whole sump pump and made sure that the basement was dry and that there was no mold. And as a matter of fact, I bought the house for my mom so that she could live closer to me when I needed to take care of her in her final days. And so I didn't want any mold or anything in that house. So we did we really did that house really well. And after she passed, then I kept the house as a rental unit. And so when we went in last to do our quarterly inspection, discovered that the guy was a little sloppy with his laundry and there were socks over top the sump pump and it had burned up the sump pump. And all of a sudden now that basement was getting wet. He was complaining about the basement getting wet. And the problem was it was his laundry that had gone into the sump well and had burned up the sump pump. Now, had we known that earlier, we could have fixed it earlier, but we fixed it as soon as we did know it. And so one of the things that we did is, of course, we had to replace the sump pump, which wasn't all that expensive because the well was already there, but we ended up putting a cage over top of it. And that eliminated his laundry from going down into the sump pump. Because again, I could fuss at him all day long to keep his laundry off the floor, but unless I'm going to go over there every day and double, you know, and police that, how am I going to enforce that? So again, with our maintenance team, we said, what can we do to eliminate this issue? And the answer was to put some sort of a cage. Now, eventually, if it gets enough laundry on top of the cage, it's going to still do that. But at least it was going to keep the socks from getting sucked into the actual sump pump. Does that make sense? So you have to get in there so that you can see what's going wrong so that you can come up with a fix. Another one is host to all. With Airbnbs being so popular, you've got a lot of folks, especially in the Columbus area, that the Columbus, Ohio allows arbitrage. And arbitrage means that you do not have to own or live in the property to have a residential Airbnb. Now, the Ohio Revised Code says that's not allowed. But Columbus, Ohio has allowed this inside the city limits that you can arbitrage and with a certificate. But the certificate is just an application that you send in, and then you pick up your certificate and you're good to go. So there's not any real teeth in the certificate as far as them coming out and inspecting your properties. And so it's up to you. Number one, you have to make your lease very clear whether you're going to allow your tenants to sublet the property, or else they could turn it into an Airbnb. So that you should address that in your lease, whether you're going to allow that or not. And so mine, I definitely have written out that that's not allowed. But if somebody comes to me and says, I want to arbitrage your property, I can always write an amendment to the actual lease that says, on this one, I'm going to give them permission if I so choose to do that. So I can still do that if I want. But you also have to be careful about house guests, maybe a friend crashing on the couch, you know, and all of a sudden you don't know anything about them. Or what I have more than not is where I rent to a single female with a couple of children, and she qualifies and everything's good and it's all going along fine. And then all of a sudden I realize that her boyfriend has moved in, and then he's brought with him, you know, his three kids on the weekends. And next thing you know, it's like twice the number of people in the house on what I had approved. So I have it right in the lease that any adults have to fill out an application. And I have all of that spelled out. So you're going to want to make sure that you address that. The whiners, you get the folks that all of a sudden, and sometimes it's just a misunderstanding, all of a sudden they're telling you every little thing. Oh, I found a scratch. Oh, I found a crack in the drywall. Oh, the door sticks. Oh, the faucet drips. I mean, it's just on and on and on and on and on and on. Even things that maybe they're supposed to take care of in your lease, but they're calling you about. One girl started that with us, and I was like, oh boy, she was a new tenant. I'm thinking, whew, this is going to wear me out. And finally, she finally said what her concern was. And it was so simple. She goes, I just wanted you to know, because I didn't want you to think I did it. At the other end, if I ever move out, then I'm going to get charged for that. And I said, oh, so all of a sudden it just took the pressure off, because I realized that she was worried about all of those little things coming back on her financially. And so I just had to reassure her that normal wear and tear was totally acceptable, and that those weren't the things that we were concerned with. And then she was fine. So sometimes it just needs a conversation. And then you've got the indulgent pet owners. And I just had one, and Sue knows my story. Kyle knows my story too. Is most recently I had one that had lived in one of my houses for 10 years, but over the course of the 10 years, and they were good payers. They weren't the whiners. Anytime anything needed fixed, the husband was a little handy. He would just go ahead and fix it. And so we were like, this is pretty cool. And so we collected a little over $100,000 during the course of that time frame. But when they called and said, hey, we bought a house and we're moving, and thank you so much for letting us live here, but now we bought a house. When we went in, we realized that somewhere in the course of that 10 years, they decided that a good business venture for them would be to breed dogs. And so somewhere they started breeding the dogs, and everything was damaged to the extent that we had to gut the entire house all the way down, and some of the subfloors, and most of the trim, all of the doors. Everything had been damaged because they raised puppies, and it was like a little puppy mill. So they had continuous puppies throughout the house. And so anyhow, that ended up being a really big flip for us. But again, I've told this story before. I can't even be mad, because we paid $62,000 for the house, and it came in, it appraised, and it's Central Ohio, a little community outside of Columbus. And it actually appraised for $290,000. And we collected over $100,000 in rents, and you know, just in the last few years. And so even though we spent money, about $30,000 to flip that house, I can't even be mad. And I ended up doubling the rent. Because again, I kept increasing the rent for them, but I didn't want to jump real high to keep it, you know, rents just went crazy here recently. And I thought that would be a big shock. So I kept inching them up each year, but I didn't do a big jump. And so it gave me the opportunity with all new everything in that house that I researched the market. I put it back out there at current market rents in on Zillow. So Sue on Zillow. And the first round, I had the price a little high because again, it had all new everything. So I had the price a little high according to the market. I was at the high end of the market and I didn't get the number of applicants that I really wanted. And I wasn't getting quite the quality that I wanted. And so what I did is I did go in and reevaluate where I was at my rent point, and I did reduce it just a bit, and it was just enough. And I actually pulled it clear off of Zillow, reworked the ad a little bit. Reduced the rent just a hint, put it back out there, and I had a lot of good quality hits. And that's when I finally got it rented. But I still was able to double the rent from what the current or the previous tenants was paying. And so anyway, so again, you have to be careful with the pet owners. And then of course you have the lawbreakers. You know, if you find out somebody's illegally growing marijuana or selling something that they're not supposed to be selling, or you know, working on cars in the garage for a fee or whatever that's against your rules, your policies, whatever. Chances are that's not going to get better with age. Chances are, you know, if they're willing to break the law, it just depends on what else they're willing to do. And so with folks like that, I usually make sure that I either get to the end of that lease and then give them a 30-day non-renewal, depending on how severe the legality is. But, I just know that over time, that's not going to get better. So when the going gets rough, you want them to get going. And so that's how you can take some action with those folks. Again, eviction is not my first response. My first response is if they're on a month to month, which I'm hoping I've gotten through that first year. And if they're on a month to month, I usually just give them a 30-day notice that we're non-renewing them, and then I try to just kind of stay out of the communication. I let Lucy handle it from there, and I do all my communication through Inago so that there is a record of all of that correspondence, any emails, text messages, all of it is there. And then at the end of the day, if they move on and there is damage done that exceeds their deposit, then you have to make a decision. Are you going to file any some sort of a claim against them? Are you going to send them to collections? And so just recently, I decided I was going to start using a company called Fabco. I don't know, Chris, if you've heard of Fabco, but Fabco is nationwide, and they are simply a collection agency for real estate. And so if you have all of your records, which is your lease, a signed application, a signed lease agreement, your deposit letter on how much damages you're asking for, and pictures to show the before and after, you can just upload that right online through Fabco, and they will go through all of the legalities of doing collections on that person. And if they don't get a response at some point, they will come back to you and say, "Do you want us to file this in court? Do you want to turn it legal?" And actually get this attached to their public record. And you have the choice whether you want to do that or not. But it is an option, and it's free to the landlord for them to pursue it. If they collect, you agree in a contract with them. If Fabco can collect, then you get 60% of the collection and they get 40% of the collection for all their trouble. And so, in my opinion, that was better than getting 0%. And so I do now, as part of our strategy, we do after 30 or 60 days of that deposit letter, we do upload everything into Fabco and turn them over to collections. And we make that very clear in our deposit letter that anything that's not paid will go to collections. And sometimes that's enough that they pay it. But if not, we let it go to collections. And then if not, I haven't had any that have gone the full cycle yet to where I had to decide whether I was going to file in claims court or not. So that's still to be decided. And I've got two right now that are in FABCO. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, that is what I wanted to talk about today. I see here it's, oh, Jen, thank you. Can you hear us okay? When my screen is shared, I can't see who comes in. I see that you're there. Are you still with us, Jen? I see she unmuted. We don't hear you though. And so today it's about real estate, but it's about how we have passive income with real estate. So once you buy and hold enough units, that's where your passive income comes in. My real estate is what has allowed me to actually retire. Jen, can you hear us okay?
Yeah, I can. That's a question I had because I'm relatively new to this, and I know that it's both a meetup and a mastermind. So I was hearing a lot about real estate, and I'm not into real estate, but I do have real estate mutual funds, REITs, which we prefer because it's a lot to manage. And I feel like you have to be a pro at it. And, you know, it's expensive where we live. I live in Massachusetts, and it's very expensive to have. Very expensive. Almost impossible to have it. Not that it's impossible, but we prefer not to mess around with that. It just feels like another thing to manage.
But
I'm enjoying the conversation.
Yes, I understand completely. Back to Chris, and if you weren't here at the beginning of the call, Chris was sharing that he has large complexes, but they're not necessarily where he lives. He has them all over. And so the more you learn about it, the more you realize that there's tons of management companies out there, or you can create your own processes of management, and you can manage real estate in areas that are more agreeable to buy in, that have the price points that you're looking for. Does not have to be in your area. We have diversified. I now have rentals in four different states. And so you too can invest in other areas. It does not have to be in where you live. So just know that that's a possibility. And there's all kind of management companies out there too, if you don't want to do the management. So Jen, thank you for being with us. Are there any questions about what we talked about today? I want to say thanks to Chris for being with us, and Kyle and Sherry, and Jen, thank you for tuning in. I know that Sue had to jump over. I saw that she had to take a phone call. Chris put his information in the chat. So all of us, I think, Jen, you might not be able to see it because it says host and panelist. Chris, if you copy and paste that and make sure it says to everyone, Jen will be able to see it as well. But he has his Zenith Equity Partners and his phone number and information on how to connect with him. He has a Calendly as well if you want to chat with him. If you want to connect more with me, and I have different lanes, Jen, I not only do I have the real estate lane, but I also have just a general business lane. I can help you with anything that you're in business, turning it passive. And also, we have a strong writer's lane. I don't know if you're writing content at all. So again, Kyle put his information there as well. And for me, it's just kathybenner.com. And so please feel free to capture all of that out of the chat if you're interested in connecting with everyone. And Chris, thank you so much. And I see Chris has reposted that to everyone. So Jen, you should be able to see that. And Kyle's is to everyone, and mine is too. So any questions, comments? Chris, any last comments?
Yeah, you know what I would do too is we do background checks on all of our residents.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I do background checks as well.
Yeah, it's worth every penny.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Statistically, we've only had one eviction of our own residents, not the people that we've inherited, but over the last 4 years, which is a statistical anomaly. So,
well, yes. And you've got a lot of units. Out of my 28 doors, over 25 years, I've had two evictions.
Yeah. We say no a lot.
I'm sorry.
We say no a lot.
Yes.
You want to make a family friendly community. And we ask for, references, and we call all of them.
And I've tightened up my background checks. Early on, again, when I just had one unit, I was just so darned excited to get it rented. And then, of course, I would, you know, inherit all of those problems and issues that I had to deal with the whole term of the lease. And so I've learned from experience to just tighten up that whole process. And so I say no a lot more as well. I would rather have a unit empty for a few weeks than to get the wrong tenant in there,
Who do
because
you
then you.
use as your background checker?
Well, Zillow does a great job for us, but I also use Fabco as well, the company that does the collections. They also do a more in-depth background check. And you can join Fabco for just a membership fee, just a monthly fee, and they'll do all your background checks for you. And so I use Fabco, and but I start with Zillow. Zillow is my favorite place to actually advertise first, because I seem to get a little bit better quality tenant out of Zillow than I do, like, for example, Craigslist or Marketplace or.
The number one places for people that go to find apartments is apartments.com. Do you know
Yes.
that?
And I do list on apartments.com. Yes. Thank you for mentioning that. I do list there.
Shockingly, we get a lot of quality tenants from Craigslist, which is crazy. It's free.
Oh, you do get more from Craigslist, you say.
Most of them are pretty good, so it's
I've gotten a
easy.
few there, and sometimes just putting a sign out front
Oh yeah, you got to
because.
do it all. You got to be like a spider.
Yeah, because folks that are driving around looking for a place, they see your sign, they already know they want to be in that neighborhood. And so then it's just a matter of, hey, can we qualify for this unit? This is exactly where we want to live. So I do very well with just putting out a sign as well. I finally went on to Vistaprint and I had professional signs made. So again, my signs look like Kyle's Realtor signs. It actually is a professionally made sign. It's not just the white one you buy from Lowe's and with the marker put, you know, please call this number. Mine are actually printed signs, and I get a very nice response off of those as well.
Excellent. Great presentation. I got to run. Thank you
Yes.
very much.
And thank you everyone for being with us today. Again, the replay is going to be at kathybinner.com. Just scroll down to the real estate section and there's a blue button there to get all the replays. So thank you so much for being with us today. Kyle, any last words from you before we go?
It might be a little bit early, but happy holidays. Can
Oh, yes,
you believe
absolutely.
it's the middle of November?
I know. And we just got back from our tribe trip down to the Sarasota area, down to the Anna Maria Island area. We just got back yesterday. And so now we're here through the holidays. Well, I say that we're here through the holidays. I do have several seminars that I'm going to, like weekend stuff, you know, where I'm traveling kind of locally here in Ohio, but we're going down to Cincinnati for another conference the first weekend of December. And then we're off to New York City to see Adam Lambert in Cabaret at the Kit Kat Club.
I'm extremely jealous of that.
I know. Don't hate me, Kyle. Don't hate me. I can't wait. It's going to be a great show. So we're going to do that in December, and then we're back for Christmas. And then in January, we're playing around with the idea. And Jen, this goes to your comment about passive income. I have created enough passive income to fund my lifestyle. And so now in January, we're playing around with the idea of flying to Iceland for the lights. So we're just playing around with that idea. I haven't booked an actual flight yet, but we're thinking about it. And then in February, we're back to Florida. And then I don't have anything planned until April, and it's my book launch. And so, Jen, back to your question, I am writing books now. That's also an income stream for me. And my third book launches the last weekend of April in Miami. So I invite you all to come to Miami for the book launch. So we have that going on. So again, my passive income does fund my lifestyle, and I couldn't be happier, but I had to get started. I had to decide, you know, what I wanted to focus on, and real estate has actually done the trick for me. Real estate has made it possible for me to have this lifestyle. So I just can't be grateful enough for the choices that we've made along the way. But you have to start. And so, Kyle, I'm glad you're started there in purchasing. I'm sure you've already made money on your property. If you look at what it's worth today than what it was worth when you purchased it, I don't know. Do you know how much?
Well, because it was a single family home that they had converted into a duplex, that totally changes the buyer pool of who's looking at it. So when we converted it back to a single family home, I estimate it doubled or tripled right then and there.
Yeah. So you have equity. And again, you can pull that equity out and purchase yet another unit and let the renters buy you another house.
That is the long-term goal. Yes. Can't wait.
Yes. Yeah. So you're setting yourself up perfectly for that. So good job. So anyway, thank you so much for being with us and put it on your calendar. We are here every month talking about the 6 F's of real estate. And I always have to look at my calendar to make sure I speak correctly. The first Monday of every month is all about building a better business. It's for entrepreneurs and solopreneurs. The second Monday is for the authors and writers. The third Monday is for the real estate investors, which is where we are today. Then today at 4 o'clock, we're talking about fitness. The fit is a fiddle today. And then the fourth Monday of every month is networking and connecting. So put it on the calendar. It's the same Zoom code every month. And you're welcome to join us every Monday. And so we'll see everyone next time. See you later.
Bye. Thanks.
Bye.